It is time for our weekly check-in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our Tacky Talks. How are you, Tacky?
Oh, doing well, Joe. It's a beautiful Friday. It looks like it's going to be almost like an early summer feeling this coming weekend until it rains. So it's only up and up from here.
Yeah, it's, you know, definitely turning to allergy season as well. Lots of folks are dealing with that. I know you have problems with that yourself.
Yeah, it's itchy eyes. I mean, actually, the mask helps keep some of the pollen out of your respiratory. But, I mean, I'm getting some more itchy eyes than anything else. And this is kind of weird, right? We live in a COVID world, but the mask provides a little bit of protection against the pollen.
Yeah, there are a lot of benefits I think people are going to find. And even, you know, post-pandemic, I think we're going to see more masks than we ever did before, for sure.
Yeah, it's a good time to buy stock in masks.
Definitely.
Definitely an investment in the future.
What happened on Beacon Hill this week we should know about?
It's been a very quiet week on the Hill overall. Budget is going to come out next Wednesday. House Ways and Means is going to make a recommendation and amendments will be due on Friday. Patriots Day week is an off week, but obviously none of us are going anywhere. There's no marathon. I mean, the city would be extremely quiet. Normally, Patriots week in Boston is actually very busy because of the marathon. People stick around and enjoy the city. And we generally take that, you know, week away besides being school vacation week because the city is very busy. And it gives Ways and Means a full week to reveal, you know, most likely going to be 900 to 1200 amendments. So Patriots Day week tends to be pretty quiet. So next Wednesday, House Ways and Means budget. Next Friday, amendments due. A week for Ways and Means to look at amendments. And then starting the Monday after that, we'll start our debate on the budget. And again, we'll be doing this by Microsoft Teams secure telephone network. I don't know what start time is. I don't know how many days it is. Obviously, the last budget was unusual because we did it so deep into the fiscal year, into wintertime. And given the fiscal crises, there weren't as many amendments because we kind of knew there was not a lot of money. But, you know, there's stabilization this year. So I think people may have seen the article that we're above benchmark. For the year so far in collections, about April fooling coming in, even though we've delayed our tax collection to May, we are above benchmark. I do think we were very conservative in our numbers, even though we're above benchmark now. We're not above benchmark from pre-pandemic levels. So I think the news was kind of like a little bit deceptive here that, oh, we're doing really well. But if you look at pre-pandemic, we're actually not at pre-pandemic numbers. We're just higher than our lower expectation of the upcoming, of the current fiscal year and expectation for next year.
Yeah, you just lowered the standards, basically, lowered the benchmark.
Yeah, the press doesn't do a good job with that explanation. We just lowered our benchmarks.
That's why we're here, Tacky, to shed light on that.
Exactly. So, no, we're not doing great. We're just doing better than we expected. That's all. So, I mean, but in the same time that, you know, $5 billion-ish plus coming to the state directly for COVID assistance over 2 years, will definitely help us balance a budget. I mean, we spent well into $1 billion in the first part of the pandemic. We spent another $1 billion on just healthcare in the second part of the pandemic, plus, you know, hundreds of million dollars on various economic assistance issues, including unemployment benefits. And of course, we'll be spending billions of dollars ourselves on unemployment benefits from our own system. So COVID-19 has been very, very expensive for state government.
And city and local government as well, as you're well aware, sure.
Absolutely. And we've actually agreed to our local aid numbers. We are going to fulfill our law regarding higher assistance on Chapter 70 education money to citizen towns and regional school districts. So we are going to fulfill our promise on that from the, term and name of it now. Because they're all like little, everyone does like an anagram these days, but it's the education funding enhancement that we proved in the law last cycle.
Oh, right. Yep.
Pre-pandemic, we approved that.
Yep.
We didn't fund it, obviously, last year because of the insanity of this economic situation. But this year, we're going to start our 6 years of enhanced education assistance for citizen towns.
Yeah, I think it means about $6 million more for Quincy, as I recall correctly.
Yeah, between $6 and $8 million.
Yeah.
Depending on where you are in the cycle, because it's a formula-based system. So
okay.
As the student census changes, your amount generally changes a little bit, but really, you never see it go down. I mean, rarely you see it go down because the census and schools are generally feeling stable or rising, especially in Quincy. You know, it's very much a lot of young families here.
Yeah. What do you think about the effort to eliminate MCAS this year?
I support that
yeah.
this year. I mean, the pandemic has made it extremely difficult for kids to get, you know, you know, it's just hard. It's just very hard, not in person for everybody. The lack of socialization and the lack of direct interaction between teachers is tough, because if you need extra assistance, it's much harder. And if you're not a native English speaker, the standardized test is already tough enough.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in this kind of educational environment, because you have to provide additional language assistance for those children. So I don't have a problem pushing it off another year. I mean, I'm not a big fan of standardized tests. I've said that before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to make them myself. But, you know, I still don't like the idea of education taught to a test as opposed to education taught for life. But that's just me.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see if the higher educational institutions take note of that and change, I don't know, their admissions policies or their standards at least.
Yeah, some schools have been starting to move away from the SATs and looking at a more holistic approach regarding students, because the standardized test does not fully respect the capacity of a student. So I'm a classic example of that. I mean, I did get to college, I did get to law school, but I did not have stellar test scores by any stretch. My SAT scores were somewhat mediocre, despite the fact, you know, I'm an honor society at BC High. I don't standardize tests well. And, you know, I was not a top 10 or top 5 student at BC High either. It's a very competitive school. Trust me, getting top 5, top 10 is very hard at BC High.
Yeah.
Very competitive. But I know I got into New England Law School, you know, with not very good LSAT scores, you know, toward the bottom half of the LSAT list.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But they look at totality of circumstances. So LSAT is only one factor to look at, totality of the student before they offer admission. So, you know, there may be, you know, more shifts going on as we move forward regarding what is a good student. Does one exam tell the story? And my life tells me no.
Okay. Yeah, it's, well, some people just don't test well too, you know, under pressure for taking the test can have an impact on the results.
Well, it's not kind of testing, right? I mean, everybody had different test experiences in what school you have. So some schools are heavily multiple choice, some schools are exam driven. You know, a standardized test, a logic-driven multiple choice, and it's one size fit all.
Mm.
As taking the bar exam myself, as a written and a multiple choice component, the multiple choice does not actually, the multiple choice, what we call the multi-state portion, does not automatically get you in if you have a high score. You still have to meet the benchmark in the written section.
Yeah.
So you have to pass both sections of the exam. You know, it's, like I said, I think this debate is going to be very heavy going into the future now regarding whether standards tests make sense on college admissions.
Let's talk a little bit about the vaccine rollout and how you're kind of rating the state's success with that right now.
We're doing a little bit better. I mean, you know, about approximately 1/6 of the state is vaccinated at this point. I have to be honest, I'm shocked because there's a lot of people, there's a lot of needles. And a lot of vials, and we talked about supply chain problems before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think people don't realize everything from those alcohol swabs to actually getting the vaccine is part of a supply chain question.
Yeah.
So I'm actually very pleasantly surprised and very happy to see the supply chain actually good. We're not hearing shortages of how to get you the vaccine. The challenge is that getting the vaccine. So, you know, 1/6, it's now April. The vaccination started, you know, late January, early February. With Johnson & Johnson coming online, you know, I know despite there was a manufacturing issue with one of the vendors, with people like Merck, Merrick, you know, another massive pharmaceutical company helping make the vaccine. I think we might get really close to heavily vaccinated by half the population by late June or early July. I actually think that may happen. I mean, we still have to get to 70-75% vaccination, but that's not unrealistic, getting to 50% by midsummer.
At this pace, right? If the pace keeps up, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The only really thing stopping us at this stage is us, you know, ourselves wanting to go get vaccinated. I think, you know, I think the manufacturing process has reached kind of a fair level of consistency, and the one shot vaccine makes scheduling so much easier for everyone, one and done. So, I'm feeling much more optimistic than I was 6 months ago, to be honest with you.
Well, that's good to hear, especially from you, Tacky.
Tacky, we all know this from this point if you watch the show enough times.
That's right.
You know, it still can be better. I think we all agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, using the public boards of public health more, you know, coordinating with local community health centers more, coordinating of local doctors groups more. But that being said, the numbers show things are getting better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are you still hearing hesitancy within, say, communities of color?
Yeah, that continues to be a concern. Well, it's actually interesting. It's community of color, but also people in the healthcare industry themselves.
Yep.
I think what is driving a lot of that is the big one's driving that is the speed of the approval process for this vaccine. And you hear constantly through pandemic component, this could take years. This is a long process. You have to make sure it's actually safe. It's not FDA approved. So, it's only FDA emergency approved. And people get that sense that it's not safe because it didn't have like the standard process.
Yeah.
That's the process. They feel that it may miss something. So the good thing is that the world is one giant test case. So something comes up, we're going to know about it. And secondly, they did actually go through a clinical trial process that's required by FDA in the US, but unlike they've done in the past, they had overlapping trials. So they started trial one, then halfway through trial one, they started trial two while trial one was still going on. And then trial three was, was started while in the midst of trial two. So as a result, it did follow the correct process and it was accelerated. And as you saw in the news, when something went wrong, they slowed the process down. And there was a commitment by, basically all the Western world, European and North American companies to not go cheap, essentially, on trials.
Right.
And this is new technology. The mRNA process is actually cheaper and more efficient than the conventional take your virus apart process. So the old days, which is still being used, they're not really at all. Most other countries are still doing the whole take the virus, take it apart, take the DNA apart, take the DNA apart to the section of the RNA that you need to tell your body to make the antibodies.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having to take a virus apart, we just manufacture the RNA ourselves. So the mRNA code is what tells your body what to do in fighting a virus. So you're getting no dead virus. There's no virus DNA in your body. It's just instructional codes of the RMNA, which identifies, it is a virus that tells your body to manufacture the antibodies and prepare your defenses. So you're going to see, much more efficient rollout on U.S. and European drugs than you will see, in China, because the manufacturing process here is actually much faster and much cheaper.
It'll be interesting to see if there are others that come online as well. I know there are still some in trials overseas.
Yeah, Novavax is on trials. They should get ready for FDA approval probably within 2 months.
Yeah.
AstraZeneca is still not approved by the U.S. Obviously, it was the blood clot problem with a small number of people in Europe. There's been a lot of halting over there. The EU is actually very behind in vaccinations as a result. There's also some political issues regarding vaccine diplomacy. We kind of touched on that in the past. Over in Europe, it isn't because they're not making Europe first. People shouldn't believe that. The Europeans definitely making Europe first on vaccination. It's just things are kind of rougher than we're having it here regarding the AstraZeneca vaccine, as well as how much is actually available.
Mm.
So we're in the greatest country in the world, in my mind still, and we have three companies that are making vaccine at a record pace, three different companies competing and also meeting our needs and eventually also the world needs. And don't be surprised if there may be another two more coming up just out of this country.
Hmm. Okay. Curious to see what you think about the issue of having a vaccine passport came up earlier this week, and the governor didn't want to really address it. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm kind of disappointed the governor didn't want to address this one. Hospitality and tourism is number two industry in Massachusetts. I know some listeners, are work in hospitality, restaurants, hotels, tour guides, et cetera, and they're feeling a huge economic impact from the lack of visitors. And we're an international city.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of nonstop flights are not going right now out of this country and into this country via Logan Airport. That's a massive economic loss for us. So I'm a little surprised the governor didn't want to at least try to address the issue, at least in the sense of one of our major economic drivers. The reality is this: the hospitality and the travel industry is going to have to require some level of verification of negative COVID for you to travel. You're in a basically small space on a plane or a bus with other people. Despite the ventilation, anything can still happen with close contact. And frankly, I would like to travel again soon, as much as everybody else, because I could use some time off, the same as everybody else listening to this right now.
Right.
And I'd like to be able to be unfound, because cell phone, and people can find me using the cell phone. I think what's going to happen, whether people listening like it or not, is that the industries themselves, particularly in hospitality, are going to take the initiative regarding COVID negative. I mean, the cruise industry is already implementing a program to have COVID negative on their ships.
Yep.
Because the risk factor is too high. I mean, you know, neurovirus is scary on a cruise ship. You know, Lord help you, as COVID, as we saw this past wintertime with all those ships trapped in the Pacific.
That's right.
With nowhere to go. You know, floating out to sea because no one would take them. It's like a leper ship, right? Nobody wants to come to port. So, you know, people can talk about all they want about, you know, well, it's not fair. Well, it's not about you anymore, folks. It's about all of us. And sooner you come to that realization, get over it. I don't know what else to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I don't want to die because of your selfishness. I'll have my mother die because of your selfishness. And it's just the bottom line. And the various hospitality industries are probably going to be the first one right off the bat, setting up protocols before even the government does.
Yeah.
Will we have a COVID vaccine passport? The question, that's very simple. It's an international standard.
Yep.
And the big power players is the EU, China, the US, Japan, South Korea, you know, Canada. I mean, you know, India, these are your top 10 big economies. The British are a top 10 economy. They're probably going to drive what the vaccine passport is going to look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, And then the Biden administration seems to be letting it kind of play out that way as well.
Yeah, if the vaccine certification is not accepted by all countries, we still can't go anywhere. So the U.S. is going to be very hesitant to allow people into the country who aren't COVID negative, mm-hmm. vaccinated, if we do not accept their verification system. Right? So, you know, it's kind of this, you know, interesting argument that, you know, we shouldn't have vaccine passports, but you want to leave the country, but you don't want to demonstrate to where you're going that you're vaccinated or you're COVID negative.
Right.
So it cuts both ways. And now you want people to come to this country to contribute to $2 to $3 billion of an economic driver in Massachusetts, but you don't want vaccine or COVID negative verification before they come to Massachusetts.
Right.
You can't have the standard be like a one direction issue. It's got to be a standard that we all accept.
Yeah, I'm curious. I haven't researched really what happened after the 1918 pandemic, you know, and how
it was a verification. Yeah,
they did. Okay.
Yeah, they did. The passport or healthcare verification is not new in this country. It's not new internationally. Thankfully, the 1918 flu kind of wore itself out by 1921. It went away. But in the interim, I mean, yeah, there was actually people who had doctor's note certifications regarding their actually having the flu.
Mm-hmm. And there wasn't, of course, the global travel then that there is today either.
Absolutely correct. And people looking at the archives back then in 1918 flu, and since it was very decentralized medical care, every community had different attitudes. Mm-hmm. And after World War One, you know, obviously a lot of parades, but a lot of communities didn't have parades because of the fear of the Spanish flu.
Yep.
And as a result, those communities had very low infection rates versus those that did have parades. This, you can find this. This actually is documented. People are hunting for these documents now. And same thing regarding mass usage. Communities that had mass usage had low infection rates than those that did. And the way they find out is how many hospitalizations were there. So.
Yeah, it's even, you know, at its core, it is a respiratory virus, and that's how it spreads.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been getting out in public a little bit more as people have seen me outside, and I still try my best to keep 3 to 6 or even more away from people as I'm backing up as people walk closer. I know we're very social people. We like to come up and say hello, but I'm kind of like, you know, personal space.
Yeah. Although your hair looks pretty coiffed today, Tacky.
It's not giving me personal space. My hair, as we've seen over the course of many weeks, you might be hosting the hair at some point by itself.
Go back to the '70s shag look, right? Can I ask you a little bit about a rally that's happening at Quincy Center on Saturday? Quincy Asian Resources are putting this this together.
Yeah, we're doing a Stop Asian Hate Rally. Actually, I'm not. It's Quincy Asian Resources working in the city of Quincy and a number of different local organizations. So I'm not in charge of the planning process. I'm along for the ride.
Okay.
To talk. And it is, my understanding, it's going to be a list of a combination of elected officials and community folks to talk about the fact that we've all experienced this, even myself. I mean, elected, just because I have a title and elected official and people think I'm important doesn't make me immune to racist and bigotry behavior. So, let's just get out there. Money and title doesn't make you different. You know, you're not immune to this type of bigotry and hatred. So I think it's important to keep this on the forefront. There's also one going on in Dorchester, the Vietnamese community, tomorrow morning as well. And I suspect there'll be more of these rallies moving forward in different communities at different times, just to keep awareness in the matter. So if you have time, obviously this posting may be after the event, but I'm hoping that normally there'll be a decent showing tomorrow at 11 a.m. and we're going to try to keep it under an hour, I was told. But it would be a rather robust speaking group of electeds and community members sharing their stories.
Yeah, in a socially distanced manner, certainly, in a safe manner, for sure.
Oh, yeah, please don't come too close to me.
What do you kind of hope will come out of this discussion, if you will, or movements, both in the city and in the state?
Well, I think the key word is discussion. Right. I mean, my big fear, again, has always been the 1982 Vincent Chin situation where, you know, you got away with murder, literally, 3 years probation and $3,000 fine. It is not 1982. And given the BLM movement this past summer, there's a greater awareness. But unfortunately, our demographic, wasn't quite swept into BLM regarding greater awareness. And I'm very happy that now there is greater awareness. I think in the last couple of weeks, people have, again, paid more attention to the history of Asian Americans and the inherent base of the culture here of why this country is anti-Asian at some level. If you look at the history, there's a continuous trend. And people are like, well, it was a long time ago. Yeah, but the long time ago determines how we behave today because it's now part of the accepted behavior. We all go through this, including myself. I mean, I remind folks, I'm as provincial as everybody else in Quincy. I mean, I'm super protective of my neighborhood, right? And that's a simple example of that, right? I'm a Wallston kid. I'm very proud and very protective of my neighborhood. But, you know, when I go visit House Neck, you know, they are very protective of their neighborhood and have a whole different neighborhood upbringing than I do in Wallston. It's very provincial. And that's just from hundreds of years of Quincy life creating this kind of local culture. The same thing happens on a big scale regarding people of different races and ethnicities. It really doesn't matter. And it's a lot of history that goes on behind it, and some things change for the better, and sometimes it doesn't. So, I mean, we could do a whole hour in the history lesson if you want to on a different day. But, you know, it's all there. It doesn't matter if you're an immigrant that came recently, or you've been here for generations, or those past actions by the U.S. government and the filtration into our base culture as part of that. For example, cultural appropriation. It's one thing to buy lovely cultural items when you travel because you enjoy them, they're part of your life, the good memories. But it's different if you do cultural appropriation for financial gain, where you take another person's culture and decide to use it to finance yourself. And then whatever that person says is the acceptance of what that item represents. And we've seen that as celebrities over many years, especially through fashion. And there's been a lot of pushback recently. I remember most recently there was one regarding kimonos. I can't remember the celebrity, but I mean, there was a lot of pushback and the result they didn't realize they were being culturally insensitive. So greater awareness is a big part of what we're seeing now. And it's good, but it's a continual conversation we need to have and greater education about all of us, you know, our contributions as well as our faults.
Yeah, education, I think, is what you said was the key. I've seen, you know, I've worked in the city 30 plus years, and I've just recently started to see some movement, at least toward having a higher representation of people of color, say in the administration or even in the school system, law enforcement, things of that nature, but it's slow.
It's slow. I mean, it's a battle of inches, not yards, in terms of moving forward, as I look at it. I've been, you know, doing battles in the city myself in my younger days. Obviously, I'm in an elected position now. So how I go about my business tends to be a little bit more different approach, especially since I'm dealing with a lot more state level issues than I did in my younger days. But simple things like translation services, you know, is not complicated. If you look at other communities that have large people of color, one of the things they've really made an effort to is improve government communications. Mm. I'm now in a fight with my House Asian Caucus and the Black Latino Caucus and generally membership at the moment, because the pandemic has shown the state government's ability to provide linguistic services or unemployment benefits has been abysmal, absolutely abysmal. And we're getting the same feeling that these grants the government put out for small business also has a linguistic challenge as well. Because while they did priority women and people of color on these grants, I think not everyone was able to take full advantage of them because I don't think they did a great job on communication. This is a big basic issue about government access. So if you look at places like Chelsea and Lowell and others, they've been making little strides forward and opening up government to the public more. But, you know, again, it's up to the city council and mayor to decide exactly how much they want to open government to all people.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm curious if it's a Northeast or New England thing, because I know other parts of the country are much more international, and certainly places in Europe, multilingual has been the standard for years.
Absolutely correct. It is a very New Englander thing, I think. It's as we said, as I said before, American culture is very complicated.
Yeah.
Because there isn't one American culture. I mean, right. You know, people from Boston, it's very different from people from the Berkshires, for Pete's sakes. I mean, even in Massachusetts, we have very different cultural aspects in our own state. So, you know, we have a very mentality here since I was a child. I've noticed this is that, you know, we're great. You should come here. You don't have to do any more. Well, we know that's not true. I'm a competitor guy. I mean, I believe that if you want to attract tourists, you want to attract the best talent, you have to compete for that. You have to figure out what it takes to get it.
Yeah.
Just because we're here doesn't make us important. And as much as I take pride in my own city and my own state, as well as this country as a whole, you know, competition is what makes us great. And, you know, we will beat people if we want to beat them in terms of economic challenges, whether it be a neighboring state or even in our case, a neighboring city or town. But you're right. It's a very provincial mentality.
Yeah.
And it sometimes loses sight of the fact that we are an international community. And the city of Boston and the greater Boston area, you know, will be an enormous population of immigrants. I think almost 2/3 of the greater Boston area is an immigrant of some form at this stage.
So that brings up an interesting question we haven't talked about in a while. Have you heard anything more about the census?
No. The last newsletter I got said September 30th. But okay. There's hope it will be closer to July 1st. I heard some rumors about that, but we know when we know when we know. For those people who don't realize that city council should have approved the precinct lines, at least had draft of precinct lines by now, and hopefully been approved before the summertime for the municipal elections. They have to have these precinct lines approved prior to municipal elections so you can take out nomination papers in the right ward if you want to run for district councilor or ward councilor. So, you know, if it isn't ready for, if we don't have numbers for the deadline, you're going to be working in the current precincts and you're going to look for office. But then we have a problem at our stage because I need the precinct lines of the city to determine what my rep district looks like as we kind of take how many people in each precinct, and I got to do the math of, you know, whatever the population of Massachusetts is divided by 160 people.
Right.
So we might have our own district maps pushed out to the 2024 election. And we're going to have to change the law to do that. So I know they're using estimates now, you know, projection estimates, not the actual numbers to start the process. But until we actually have actual numbers, there's not much more we can do. So we may have to pass a law to push everything out 2 years.
Right, right. As I understand it, the governor's emergency declaration order expires June 30th. Is that right?
Oh, it expires as long until he decides not to expire it. So
okay. All right.
Don't get caught up on those dates. He has the ability to move those around.
Oh, he does. Okay.
Or you can issue a new order immediately afterwards.
Okay.
So I suspect that as the phase reopening continues, you know, it will determine largely how much longer this executive order will continue.
Right. And I would think, too, he wouldn't want to shut the state off from receiving any more federal help if it's not in a state of emergency.
Absolutely. We actually are receiving a lot of FEMA monies. So a lot of what's going on here actually also has a FEMA component because we're treating it like any other natural disaster.
Right.
You know, the Biden, the Trump administration kind of started that process, but the Biden administration set that into overdrive. They've fully admitted this is a natural disaster situation and made access of FEMA monies throughout the country. And one example of that is housing issues. People are becoming homeless because of COVID for economic means. The people who are in homeless shelters right now can't be in close quarters. If you visit homeless shelters, you understand what I'm talking about, very close quarters. And you know, FEMA money is being used to kind of separate everybody out for the moment until we get through the vaccination process. So, you know, there's a lot of different pools of money floating around. Medicare money been floating around all year to try to keep the hospitals alive. I don't think people realize Berkshire Hospital was on the verge of collapse. Lawrence Hospital was on the verge of collapse during last summertime. And the Trump administration, as well as the state, and now the Biden administration, has been doing everything we can to keep these community hospitals open with no real reduced elected medical procedures while being extraordinarily COVID ready. And now hospitals in Massachusetts have designated ICU COVID hospitals. So, you know, people have been moving around over the state. And as we've all seen on the nightly news, you know, hospitalization rates are up again and so is infection rates. So this is a grave concern because I do not want to see us go back on phase reopening.
Yeah, it looks like the variants are really wreaking havoc right now.
Well, supposedly the sample testing indicates that the UK variant seems to be the dominant variant at the moment.
Right.
The New York outbreak was from Europe. It wasn't actually from China because the virus already had a mutation that showed it was a European mutation. So the West Coast definitely was coming in from China. The East Coast definitely came in from Europe.
Yep.
Based on science.
Yeah. Have you heard anything about the efficacy of the vaccines against the variant?
J&J, Johnson & Johnson, was actually tested in the midst of the variants.
Oh.
So if you got a Johnson & Johnson vaccine, know that your vaccination happened in the middle of the variants. Moderna and Pfizer are conducting tests. They believe their vaccine is effective against the variants. For example, Moderna, you know, had been down in South Africa. I think Pfizer's also went down there too because of the South African variant, to run a clinical test down there, start to test 1, 2, 3, you know, trials down there to see what would happen. Things are positive. Do not go vaccine shopping.
Right.
Get the vaccine that's made available to you. Definitely make your time to do that. Do not worry about one being more effective than others. The test, as a clinical test, will always continue at this stage. I think the data will show that the efficacy rate will be pretty much the same across the board.
Yeah, the overall goal is herd immunity, right? So all three will help us get there.
That's correct. I mean, we can stop the infection rate among people, but those, you know, it will result in those of us who haven't been vaccinated yet not getting sick, and then prevent, you know, the disease from finding a new host. That's what vaccination herd immunity is about, is to try to cut off the virus from having a new host and, you know, manufacturing jump. So, you know, the number is like 70% more infected than the UK variant. So if you take 2.5 persons infected after touching one infected person, you make that add 70% to that. I mean, you're talking close to over four people were infected on the UK virus from that first contact.
Yep.
So, I mean, it can almost double the probability of you being infected.
Get your shot.
Get your shot and continue with the chant we've been saying for 3 years now, masks and hygiene, and don't touch people if you're not feeling well. I mean, it's the same. Once again, I'm always shocked. It's like, what kind of hygiene were we doing before this?
That's so true.
30 people? I mean, what was going on before pandemic? Did we just realize we're not, like, hygiene sensitive? I can get over that.
It was certainly not in the forefront of our minds like it is now, that's for sure.
No, I mean, definitely, I hope this is a lesson for everybody to continue the same hygienic process we've been doing for the past year and not stop.
Yeah, I mean, not only for a pandemic, but for bacterial infections, for other viruses, you know, it's just good overall.
Yeah, I don't want to get the neurovirus, folks. We don't have a vaccine for that one.
Right.
You know, not fun. In general, like food poisoning issues, right? It's largely done from bacteria on the outside of your skin. You don't wash your hands while serving food or cooking food. You can drop some of those exterior skin bacteria and some of those ingested and you get a degree of food poisoning too. Yep. So it's not just rotted food. It can actually come from epidermic bacteria that floats in outside of your skin that you wait and try to get inside of you.
You know, we haven't talked about Tacky. I'm curious what your take is on the current housing situation in Massachusetts, the boom, and if you're worried about a bust.
Well, it depends. I mean, depends on how the flight from Boston continues.
Yeah.
Dense urban areas have become very unattractive because of the nature of COVID. Again, if you're in a multi-unit building that's vertical, if one person gets sick, you know, there's a possibility that everyone will get sick as well. There might be a drive to get out of multi-unit living. People always love Boston because of convenience of walking in the public transit, but public transit's scary because, again, you're in an enclosed space. And, you know, living in closed, tight space areas, people that know Selfie and Dorchester and locales know there's almost no distance between homes. So, in, you know, my friends who represent, you know, regions like Back Bay and Beacon Hill, you know, the reps up there, or have seen lights not come back home. Lights not come back on with the neighbors. They haven't been back yet. So I do think housing boom will continue.
Okay.
As people leave Boston or other dense neighborhoods to suburban communities with wide yards and space.
Mm-hmm.
I do think this is also a reflection of income inequality because people's means are going to move.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that throughout the pandemic. The question becomes, what happens to Boston real estate prices and other dense community real estate prices, both commercial and residential, because your customers are leaving. It's not just they're leaving, but the customers are leaving. And they may have extended vacancies because, you know, it's not like, you know, I'm going to move into Boston and spend, you know, eight times what I pay in Quincy.
Right.
Or whatever ridiculous amount of money you have to spend. But on the flip side, it's going to drive up prices here at home too. So, you know, your property taxes is partially driven by home valuation. Every time people sell a home, great, my value goes up. So does your property tax. So, and then we'll see on retirements. I fully expect in the public sector, there's going to be a lot of retirements happening because people are making that real decision about how they want to spend their quality of life. You know, in their second half of their lives. If you have kids that are out of school and mortgage is paid, you're going to have to start thinking about what's the most important thing to you at the time.
Yeah, so, I think you're right. There's a lot of reassessments going on, I think, especially if you're closer to retirement than not.
We saw that last spring prior to nomination papers being due in the middle of the pandemic. You know, some older reps, you know, started thinking about whether or not they should run again. Some decided to do it one more time and some decided not to. I think we're going to see that same decision again coming this wintertime.
Yeah.
Because other older elected officials around the state are going to reevaluate whether or not, you know, running every 2 years, dealing with, you know, all the stuff that we deal with. Is it worth it, or is it better to enjoy your kids and grandkids and slow down your life a bit and enjoy what you have? Mm-hmm. Like I said, personal decision, but I'm anticipating a lot of retirements as part of a pandemic in the public sector. I do think to maintain a workforce in the private sector, particularly in white collar industries, which is about 35-40% of the state, you're going to see massive changes as part of that. And part of it will probably to try to retain workforce, get not to retire, because the market's great right now. I mean, if you're going to cash out on your 401ks, this is the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, trouble is with the cost of living around here, unless you're going to like Ohio or something, it's not going to last too long.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, so people are going to move, right? They either move to a lower cost of living part of the state, or they move to another part of the country if they're comfortable enough to move to another part of the country.
Right.
Or they wait it out till vaccine gets better and then move to another part of the country. I think it'll be a lot of migration in this country, largely driven by economics and personal safety in the next year. I think we'll be seeing some migration internally quite a bit.
Yeah. How do you think it will impact Quincy in particular?
Oh, housing. I mean, I see house signs go up, you know, in the neighborhood of my, you know, quick walks around trying to get some air. And the houses are not sticking on the market very long from my observation this past winter. So I expect, and the audience is going to not like this, your property value is going to go up. Your taxes are going to go up with that property value increase. The question really becomes, what happens to all these new multi-unit housing developments?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like, a game of musical chairs. You know, they're going up so fast. Which one is going to get stuck with an empty building?
That is a legitimate question. Yeah. And given the downtown project, you know, that's a very good question. And remote work You know, the question is, you know, how much office space does one need, or do you go to more of a shared space situation? For example, Lorraine C has a shared space office up in North Quincy, up by the Bank of America. You know, try to see if she can capitalize on people working from home, but they need a meeting space to meet folks, or, you know, just need some temporary space here and there just to get out of the house on a scheduled manner and, you know, at low rent because it's a shared rent cost. In a walking distance neighborhood. So is that the future? Well, my friend Lorraine is gambling that this may be the future of office space.
Huh. She may be right. You know, I think we're going to see a lot of sea changes that we don't even know yet going forward.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, as I've talked to you, this medium of communication has been great, as much as I love, you know, coming to coming to the studio, talking about Crosby, which, you know, obviously we're having a social distant pangs not to spend time together. You know, this has really changed how I communicate, and you have seen me more in the past year. You've seen me in 10 years.
That's very true. Yeah. What's going on at the Registry of Motor Vehicles, Jackie? They're just not having a good time.
That whole agency has been having a bad time for a long, long, long
time. It really has.
Going back in ancient history, I mean, you know, Grabowski, when he was the R&B guy, had really modernized the thing and you know, brought it very high efficiency, best of customer service mentality. And ever since Grabowski left during the Mitt Romney administration, it's been a downhill trend ever since. Let's be honest about it, folks. And, you know, when I'm talking about Mitt Romney governor time, I mean, we're talking a long time ago.
Long time ago, yeah.
So, you know, the combination of, you know, failure of technology plus pandemic plus outsourcing at some level has resulted in a combination disaster. And it's squarely, you know, on the arm. You know, the registrar, the RMV, you know, is responsible for this. I don't know when they're going to get this resolved.
I don't think they do either.
I agree with that, actually. I don't think they know, and I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, they have been migrating over to a new inspection system for 2 years. We are a low bid state, guys, just to remind you all. We take the lowest bidder based on whether they can perform. So that actually works against us. I think in technology in particular, and we saw this with the web portal for vaccines.
oh, yeah, that.
That little issue. Low bid doesn't always work for us.
Yeah.
It's not the days of construction with the days of technology. And sometimes going cheap is what you get today. And I know the public doesn't like the government to spend more money than they have to, but then we have these situations and people are like, what happened? Well, we're low bid state. We take the lowest offer, as long as they meet the contract standards, and they screw up because they're not good quality, even though they can make the standards, the public loses. This is actually a conversation we've been having again in the state house about whether we should change low bid law, maybe in certain sectors. I'm not saying we will, but you know, the public is feeling it.
Yeah, or at least readjust the standards for who qualifies for being able to bid.
Absolutely, because obviously, you know, we want to save money. That's part of the reason we have the bid standard. We want a competitive bid process so people offer the best price possible. But we also want quality work.
Right.
And notice that a lot of our problems on low bid is right now technology driven.
All right. Anything else coming up we should know about right now, Jackie?
Well, I don't know. I think right now I kind of advise that people do watch Asian Americans on Amazon Prime. I think I mentioned this before.
You did, yeah.
Interest on Asian American history. It does a very good synopsis because there's a lot of history, but they condense it, the key points, condense into a 5-hour documentary. I watched it last year. I really encourage everyone to watch it this year. And beyond that, you know, get vaccinated, please. And stay healthy and stay safe. And obviously my office is available to answer questions at 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Just slap a button and so we'll get back to you, as well as tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. And you all know my Facebook at Tacky Chan State Representative, as well as my Twitter account at Tacky Chan. You find me and Senator Warren in last week. I've never seen that many hits on my Twitter account in my life. So clearly, you know, you with someone that has a much more bigger Twitter universe than yours. It's quite remarkable watching the statistics. And also, thank you to QATV. You sent out statistics over to us about viewership. It appears people do like to see us.
Which is kind of nice. You anyway, I don't know about me, but it's kind of nice to know somebody's watching. Yeah.
You know, I thank everybody for, you know, tuning in as well. So, you know, stay tuned. I mean, AAPM month is coming in May. I know it's very early in April, but May will be here before we know it. I was surprised we got just showed up in April. Just happened. I was like, April already? Mm. You know, we'll have something to talk about next week about how the budget's going to roll out.
Okay.
And see where we are there. And I think, you know, after St. Patrick's Day, I think you're going to feel the big impact of hospitality, Patriots Day week.
Yes. Yep. We'll see. All right. We will see you in a week, Tacky.
Talk to you then, Joe. Be well. Be safe.
Bye-bye.